Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey, and I'm looking for answers. What does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to have a good, well-lived life? This podcast is conversations with people that look like they have it sorted. My guest on the program is Dorota Owen. She's an inspiring leader and equally at home speaking to a conference, delivering a keynote, or teaching a class of teenagers. She is a teacher, and that is her first love. The inspiration of people, and there's no better place to start than in schools and with children. I have known Dorota since I moved to Scotland 14 years ago, when she welcomed my family as we met her through various events, schools and other groups. I always remember her capacity to lift the room as she entered. I got to know her better as a Toastmaster, and it was there I saw her leadership capacity and watched her skills develop as she took on new and more prominent roles in environmental movements and in sustainability. Dorota is still a teacher, a facilitator, a speaker and a leader, and while teaching is her first love, she also likes to travel. So she has chosen to mix it up by travelling, speaking and teaching. I've not seen much of her in recent years as our kids have grown up and she travels a lot. And this interview was a result of a chance meeting and between trips. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Dorota Owen. So welcome to Life, Passion and Business, and I'm delighted to be sitting on my sofa with a friend of mine who I've known for many, many years, and I've always been inspired by how she lives her life. So welcome, Dorota Owen.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much, Paul, for that lovely introduction.
Well, I'll do a full introduction later. What I tend to do in these podcasts, as you probably know, I make an introduction from this conversation. So this is Life, Passion and Business. And as I will explain to you and my listeners, I started this podcast in a bid to search for those answers to the questions, the difficult questions of life. And I put those questions to all of my guests. But I always ask the guests to tell us where they are. How did you get to where you are now?
Well, thank you for asking. And before I even answer that question, I'd like to comment on what just happened there. It's not about what you said. What I noticed is how you said it. The thing I noticed, Paul, that you spoke really clearly. You enunciated every consonant. I could hear you very clearly. And I remember that the reason we got to know each other so well is because we were in a club together.
We were
in a Toastmasters club, which is a club that was set up a long, long time ago to help people that had lost their confidence during the Depression. And they gained their confidence by helping each other become better public speakers. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed, Paul, that you have become an excellent public speaker. And the reason I was invited to come to this club, it must have been about 10 years ago. Our friend Karen Schwartz was responding to what she felt was a need in the world. People who were passionate about different things in life, she felt, were losing out because they weren't clear communicators. And she felt her contribution to things as diverse as climate change and other global problems was to help people enunciate more clearly,
yes,
to communicate more clearly those passions. So that's really where it all started for me. I know it's hard to believe for anybody who knows me now, you know, I'm radiantly confident. I was super shy as a child. I was quite seriously bullied at school for all sorts of reasons, one of them being that my parents were Polish, and so the children at school thought it would be fun to make fun of me. And I wore glasses, and I had quite a big facial disfigurement, and I just really felt that I would love to have been invisible because I was quite badly bullied, but I was definitely mute because I didn't have my voice. So that was the kind of wound that I carried with me. And certainly I felt that I could never speak in public. It would be too scary. And I don't think I would have got very far if I had stayed in that state of mind. But I had an experience after I left university where I was working in art galleries. I had a degree in history of art, and I was asked to speak about the collections. And I was passionate about these beautiful collections that I had been cataloguing. So I did agree to do the speech, but I tell you, that was not a glass of water in front of me on the podium. That was a glass of neat vodka. That's what got me through. I was really scared. But I did sort of persevere. And then to get anywhere in that career, I needed to do a teaching certificate. So I went back to university and did that teaching certificate. Part of it was a practice session in a school. And I went into a classroom and I was asked to teach. And I just knew I couldn't do it. Absolutely no way in a million years. I just dropped everything and I ran out of the classroom. It was so humiliating. And I ran out of the school and I just felt desperate. And I ran down the road and it started to rain. So I had to go somewhere. And the only place I could see was Paisley Abbey. So I ran into Paisley Abbey. And then I walked down the aisle and sat in the front of this beautiful big stained glass window. And I prayed. I said, God, help me. Please help me. So I really was in that state of absolute abject.
Is this something that you'd done before? Were you
never.
Were you that connected to
never.
This?
Never, absolutely.
So this was you reaching out for something in a desperate place.
I think anybody who's desperate starts to pray.
Oh, yeah, possibly.
I think anyone who's desperate will say, please help me. And that's what I did. And, that was actually the most extraordinary thing that's ever happened to me. The light that was coming through the window, it seemed to just come all over me. And if you've ever seen Star Trek, where they say, beam me up, Scotty, and the person gets flooded with light and they get transported to another world. Metaphorically, that's what happened to me. I really felt flooded with this light. I felt flooded with confidence. And I felt quite differently when I walked back out of the church, out of the abbey, and I walked back to the school and knocked on the classroom door. And I said to the teacher who was there, I said, I'm terribly sorry. I just had a spot of dust in my contact lens, but I can come in and I can take the class now. And I did. I took the class. I've no idea what I did or said, but I was clearly inspired. And when the bell rang, the pupils did not leave the room. And that was really life-changing for me. You know, really out of that moment, I became somebody who was very confident but could learn how to teach others the same skills that I started to build up. And I did it as a teacher. I became a teacher of English literature. And I worked in the school system for a long, long time. And that was, let me see, that was about almost 40 years ago. I've been a teacher ever since. I've been a teacher ever since all over the world in all many different contexts. And I still work in high schools. And I really recognise when I look at the pupils that I teach, what it is to be without confidence. That's where I work.
Wow. And that journey, as you said, has taken all over the world. And obviously, so where is your passion in that? What is it you're passionate about?
That's really easy to answer. You know, I remember feeling really shy, feeling unseen and feeling mute. And my passion is to help other people open the doors to themselves so that they can find their voices, so that they can build their own confidence so that they can be who they are. Because as Catherine of Siena said, and I think this was quoted in a wedding service, a royal wedding a couple of years back, be who you are and set the world on fire. So my passion is to help ignite other people's fire, to help them ignite their own fire, whatever that might be. So because of that, I work as a coach, I work as a minister, I work as a conference organizer, I run different types of training internationally. I'm a director of various institutions. I'm chair of the board of directors of several, and I'm an ambassador for 5 international networks. That sounds huge, doesn't it? But if you just boil it all down, it's exactly the same thing. I'm just a teacher of confidence.
I think you're a little more than that. I'm pretty sure you're a little more than that, actually. Because I see you travel a lot.
Yes, I do. Yeah, I am. I'm a big traveller. It's interesting when you think about what your name actually means. I believe that all of us actually are well named. So my original surname is Rising. It's a German word. It comes from Rising. It means to travel. So clearly I'm born a traveller.
So you live the name. Okay.
I live the name. But it means a lot to me because my parents were Polish and I was brought up in Scotland. We always holidayed in the summer in France and we skied in different countries at Christmas time or spring. So I was brought up thinking of myself as a European citizen for sure. When I got married, my husband worked for Shell International, so we worked and lived in the Middle East and also in the Far East. And if you asked my children which country they are from, they would find that very hard to answer in any other terms than being a global citizen or an Earth citizen. So that's the way I feel. And it does involve a little bit of shape-shifting or modulating what I say and how I say it, depending on where I am. So I've had to learn that. I'm still myself wherever I go. I find myself adapting to the cultures and values of the different places that I might be working in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely, I travel a lot. Some people think, oh, that must be so tiring. But actually, I travel with great ease. I mean, the minute I'm on the plane, I'll fall asleep or read a book. I think the plane's the only place I truly relax. And I saw you often, Paul, at Inverness Airport when you had a business there. And I always thought it was wonderful coming into Inverness Airport because you'd be there, it felt like home.
Yeah, I have had different guises, yes. So you also, on the other side of it, you became an interfaith minister at some stage. What led you to that journey?
Oh, that's really interesting. I think it comes back to that moment of really feeling flooded with a divine energy in Paisley Abbey and always being aware that there's more to life than a material explanation. Both my parents are scientists. At the same time, my mother had a real spiritual awakening and explored other faith traditions. She did yoga and meditation and so on. So I've always understood that science and spirituality are fundamentally related through mm-hmm. certain traditions for sure. And I mean, certain physicists are entirely spiritual in mm-hmm. their outlook. I don't need to quote that at all. I think people know that. So that was always my awareness that I had a material life and I had a spiritual life and these were intertwined. And I had a very early experience of really knowing viscerally that the world was one, that I really understood that atoms were vibrating and I was vibrating and it was the same energy. I really felt that it was an experience for me. I didn't know where to put that. And my mother suggested, since I was at university at the time, to go and speak to the Catholic priest. So I had instruction from the Catholic priest and the idea was that I'd be baptized as a Catholic. And I just thought this was a great idea. I couldn't wait to be a priest. And they had to break it to me quite gently that I couldn't be a priest because I was a woman. I was absolutely astonished by this. It just hadn't entered my domain that women couldn't do anything they wanted to because my own parents were very equal-minded. So Catholicism didn't really work for me.
No, I can see that.
And over the years, I explored different traditions when I lived in different countries. So when I lived in the Middle East, I was very interested in the Sufi part of Islam. I had many Muslim friends mm-hmm. and I deeply appreciated the way they were in the world. And then I started to go to ashrams in India and also explored Siddha Yoga and certain ritual aspects of Hinduism. I was really interested in many of the world religions.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came to live in this area here in Scotland near Findhorn, around about 2005, I heard about the interfaith ministry and it was absolutely obvious that my whole life had been a preparation for that. So I signed up to do this training, which was in London, and I would fly down once a month to do this experiential training. And then it was correspondence and telephone for the rest of the month. But it was really, really easy for me to do this because I'd already studied so much of it before.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt really easy. And what I was doing was synthesizing all those different paths. And our slogan is many paths, one truth.
Mm-hmm.
Or as I heard today, one light, many lamps. So I'm definitely not a fundamentalist in any one religion. I don't really even believe that religion is the way forward to me. Religio comes from the Latin religiare, which means basically rules, follow the rules. And anyone who knows me knows I'm a rule breaker. The rules don't exist unless they're sensible. So that's my path. So now what I do as an interfaith minister is I hold ceremonies such as weddings and rites of passage, baptisms and so forth, and sometimes even I make up ceremonies like a divorce ceremony, which is a really lovely thing to do, actually. It creates a beautiful healing energy. And also, I believe that everything I do now is part of that ministry. So especially working in schools, that's my ministry. That's my church. That's where I believe I can be most effective.
So clearly you're passionate about a lot of things.
Yes.
Have you ever lost your passion?
I got very, very stressed and very depressed when I was living in Manila in the early 2000s. And I think I was suffering from postnatal depression, but I also felt, I really felt I was in the wrong place. It's really hard to explain that to people because I was married to somebody who lived in Manila who worked for Shell International. We had a beautiful house, servants, swimming pool. We lived in a gated community, and anybody else would have thought they'd won the lottery, and I felt dreadful.
It's interesting because my last podcast guest, a lovely lady from New York, said she was living a life that just wasn't hers.
Yeah, it just wasn't my life. I used to go downstairs at like 3 a.m. and sit by my swimming pool under this beautiful frangipani tree that was so fragrant and look at the moon. And I just felt devastated. I thought, this is not my life. This is not my life. I can't imagine anything more painful than knowing that you're not living your life. It didn't help that on the other side, people looking at me and judging it would say, well, she's so lucky. What's she complaining about? I couldn't complain. You know, I could see that materially it was very blessed, but it was simply not my life. And it took a bit of effort to get out of that. And what actually happened was I wrote a book about my experiences, and then I was headhunted to become executive director of InTouch Community Services, which was really about holding workshops. Mm-hmm. And I was leading workshops on how to lead an authentic life. And that was the way that I got out of it.
Leading workshops about living an authentic life, and you were living an unauthentic life yourself.
I was actually transitioning. Uh-huh. I was looking at my life thinking, this is not how I want to live my life. And I started to give talks and speeches about how one could.
Yeah.
So I was basically creating the path that I was going to be stepping out of. And people often say you teach what you need to learn. That's what I was doing. I was teaching courses on confidence building.
Yeah.
And it helped me to grow in confidence so that I could step out. It also gave me the financial capacity to make that move as well. So that was the way it happened. So when I left, that was quite funny. People were saying, how can you leave this life? You've got this amazing life. And I thought, well, you don't know. It doesn't feel amazing on the inside. And then I came to live in Findhorn. You know, I didn't have a beam or living in a caravan. I was happy as Larry then. I was really happy because I knew that was the beginning of my life. I didn't know where it was going to head, but at least I felt I was back to ground zero, but it was the right ground zero. And I think in my book, I did quote something which said, it doesn't matter how far you've gone on the wrong path. The minute you turn back and start again, you're on the right path. That's all that really matters. So I was living that.
So you got your passion back by writing the book and stepping out into confidence. So let's move forward in time now, because part of this program is exploring the big questions of life for you now at the moment. So we've looked at passion. So what about success? What is success? Because success was the big house, was the gated community. For many people, that would have been success. And that clearly wasn't. So what's success for you now?
Such a really good question. I mean, I'm not terribly successful in the eyes of the world. I haven't made pots of money.
That's what I mean. You see, we have this idea that being successful is the house, is the car, is the trappings. Yeah. But a lot of people are realising that actually it's quite hollow.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, this is the point. You know, the trappings didn't make me happy. And the other thing that was interesting as well is I had a substantial role as an executive director. I quite liked it, but it wasn't the role that made me happy. It was the work. So now I have really not got a very important role in life. I always tell people I am a substitute teacher. It's the easiest thing for me to say what I do is I just go into schools and replace a teacher that's absent. Because effectively, yes, that's what I'm doing. For my own part, I'm having a lot of fun doing it. And that's where success is for me. So here it is. Success is doing what I feel right for me to do. Success is loving what I'm doing, really enjoying it. success is receiving beautiful notes of appreciation and feedback from people. And that's the outer world recognizing that what I'm doing is worthwhile to them. So then that other part of it, success, is knowing that what I'm doing really is worthwhile, that it's helping other people, that it's making other people's lives better. And I think there's another part to this as well, because quite possibly I'll never really be a success in these terms, but for me it is important. I've got a very big vision, a very big vision for the world. Because I've seen how people, children especially, can become very compressed by their experiences within education, I have a really clear vision for what I want in the world. I would like young people to have much happier lives. And that means that where education happens, and it doesn't necessarily mean schools, but it means the educational experiences that people have, I would like them to be more open, kinder, and more graceful than the experiences that I had. So I've got a really big vision for changing the face of education globally. And that's the bit that I'm really working on in all of the things that I do. So the different countries, the different conferences, the ambassadorships, all the different roles that I have, they're all around that vision. So true success, I guess, would mean when that would happen. But that might never happen in my lifetime. So I guess my version of success is that I'm living it. I'm living that path. I may never get to see it. I'm beginning to get glimmers of this world approaching. It might not happen in my lifetime, but success is being on the path.
That's a good answer. So I have two questions left. And this one I always give to people because I find it's an open door. Is there anything that I should have asked you that I didn't?
Yeah.
And you see, the idea is, what about this? You could walk away from this and go, oh, I wish I'd said so. So here's your opportunity. What is it that you think you should answer?
Yeah.
And of course, it means you can be as vulnerable and not vulnerable as you like. Yeah. You can say what you like here.
Yeah. I'm thinking about this. Yeah, I'm thinking, the thing I find really interesting is I've often said that every person is has a different packaging. Yeah, on the outside, everyone has a different packaging. Like, for example, my partner's packaging is really different. He's got different politics, different tastes in food, different tastes in music. He speaks a different way. In every measurable way, we're entirely different. And yet we have a very profound soul connection.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the bit that matters to me in the world, is the relationships that I have with people. So I would love to be able to be less judgmental, to be less critical of other people. I'm really, really working on it. And the way to do that really is just to see into their hearts and to see them as another soul, a kindred spirit. So the question you could have asked me is, what's my packaging? And these are the things that I value, that I really like, that might drive other people mad. So what I really value is beauty. I love things to look nice. You know, my original studies after I left school were architecture and the history of architecture, and then later on history of fine art. So I really love beauty. I love things to be designed well. I love things to have form and function married very beautifully. I love things to be efficient. It actually really means a lot to me that things are well organized or clean and tidy. Now, I know that doesn't necessarily be somebody else's value. You know, I know that there are artists, for example, I know who really value chaos and love to have a really messy house, but that ain't me. I'm somebody who really loves to have things rather lovely. And I'm being interviewed by you just now in this home that you share with Cheryl, that you spent so many years refurbishing and redecorating and being very exacting about the way you want to be in it. That was a lot of work. I want you to know it was worth it, because it means a lot to me to be able to sit here with you in a very, very lovely house. But there's a kind of general principle here, and people who know a lot about astrology will say that somebody who's ruled by the sign of Virgo loves beauty, loves order. And so in that classical sense, I'm definitely a Virgo rising. But I appreciate that not everybody likes that. And that's the bit that's quite interesting for me. How is it possible for me to be at one with somebody else's packaging, so to speak, with somebody else's choices? I'm trying very hard on that one.
Yeah.
And so that's a question for you. What's your packaging, and how do you cope with other people's packaging being so different?
It's a good question, and I'm not going to answer it now.
No, I'm just letting you know that is the question.
So the final question I give all my guests is, Okay, life, passion and business came about, as I've already said, about my journey with my father. And it also came about from my own questions that came out of that thinking. So, you know, we're born, we eat, we drink, we have sex, we have families, we have all these things. You know, we have businesses, we make money. But what's it all for? What is the meaning of life for you?
Well, you really put me on the spot there. Well, you know, it's maybe not so hard. I'm just thinking about it. I think it comes very much out of my particular alignment with beauty. And I suppose what I'm really saying is there are things that I love in the world. And the older I get, the more I love the world. I love the journey to the train station past your house, past the river, past the trees, the herons, the swallows, the birds that I hear in the morning. And I also love the fact that there are things that I have done or things that I have created that have brought love into the world for other people. I can't think of a better reason to be alive other than to love and be loved. And I'm not just talking about people. I'm talking about everything that's alive in the world. Mm-hmm. All the different sentient beings. And I'm also talking about the very landscape itself. And I mean, why not? I'm talking about the planet and I'm talking about the cosmos and I'm talking about the universe. And I remember once hearing a wonderful man, Ian Turnbull, saying, there is a force in this universe that is more powerful than any other force, and that is the force of love.
Thank you very much for your time with me today. It's been great talking to you on the sofa here. So if anyone would like to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
My name is Dorota, D-O-R-O-T-A, Owen. Mm-hmm. You'll find me on Facebook, mm-hmm. and you can email me on that name at gmail.com.
Lovely.
It's super simple. I don't even have a website, and the reason is I'm so lazy because I do so much I'd have to keep updating it. So I figure Google does that for me. So far.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
It has been a pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for making your house so beautiful.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Dorota Owen. If you want to find out more about Dorota or any of my guests on the show, please visit the webpage lifepassionandbusiness.com. The Friday show was recorded this morning as a Facebook Live with Lisa Avery. She is my co-host on that program. And the subject this week is all about change. If you'd like to get to that recording now, you can do so by visiting the Facebook group Life, Passion and Business, and the recording will be in there. So thanks for listening, and I hope to catch you later.